looking so beefy there, Mr. Redback.
That's because you made me that way. I wish I looked like that. I'll tell you what, the food, technically I'm in the South, and the food here, it's all biscuits. All biscuits, and I'm like, I look like I'm 9 months pregnant right now.
Mets biscuit operated, I love it.
Oh my gosh. So designing with foil, best practices and creativity. So we all know what it is, right? We know what the polymer inkjet foil process is, everybody here. But I'm just going to go over it for those who might be watching it in the near future. Obviously, the photo on the left is just laying down the inkjet varnish. That's just a nice coat of varnish, probably 72 microns-ish. And then the photo on the right is the same thing, but with foil laid on top of it. So the foil sticks to where the varnish is. And that was something that a lot of people, when I just talked to them about it, they don't understand that that's how it works. They think there's some kind of other magic going on, but it's just wherever there's varnish, you get foil.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you don't use the foil at all. Yeah. Ryan, you notice I've stolen some of your work here.
those look familiar to me.
Yeah, because it's such beautiful work, and it shows the viscosity and the depth of what's going on here. And this is actually very difficult to photograph. It's different. This is a technique that's different from traditional foiling, because you do get that raised effect. Traditional foiling, in order to get that effect, you have to additionally do embossing with a counter. And that way you do get that raised effect, and you put the foil on top of that embossed area. But that is a multi-step process, and it is expensive, because you have to have all the dies and embossing counters made. I consider the polymer inkjet digital foil to be more applicable to modern design. If you're wanting to do something that's really old school looking, like a kind of a stippled foil design on a Italian paper that has that kind of turn of the last century look and feel, then you probably need to go in that direction. Right. I've had projects in the past where we've been doing that and the customer loves it, and we're like, well, let's just present them with a better option. And we do it digitally, and then of course it just doesn't look the same. It has a different appeal. It has a whole different look and feel to it. And it's not particularly bad, but it might not suit the purpose and goal of the client. So you always have to take that into consideration. There's different types of foil: metallics, matte, pigment, holographic, and then there's other overlay foils as well.
Now, Matt, there's a big question, I think, around this. Mm-hmm. I think fundamentally we should start here, is where can I buy foil for my digital embellishment press?
Okay, so we all know that this foil for this machine has a specific backer to it, and that it has to be compatible. So you've got hot foil, cold foil, you're going to be dealing with coated stocks, you're going to be dealing with laminates. Some types are going to work better with others. A lot of it is trial and error or experimentation.
Right.
You can get sample rolls of foil from the companies that make it, and there are more and more and more of them every day.
So who do you buy from? Like, for example, who I know there's Kurz's out there.
I think
there's Liberty Foils.
Yep.
There's a Great Western Foils.
And
there's Crown Relief.
Crown Relief.
Konica Foil. There's who else is out there that you like to use?
Murata.
Okay.
Yeah. From what I'm finding out, every shop has their favorite.
Yeah.
And it's down to the flavor of their machine. You know, it's each machine has its own personality. A lot of shops run a lot of the same type of substrates. This shop here runs almost entirely laminate or an aqueous coat of some sort. Everything is coated or laminated. A lot of laminate. Wow. And I know Adam down in Tulsa runs a lot of laminate too. So you'll find that combination through ordering test rolls through these different manufacturers to, run some tests on this and that and these and those and find out what works and then order it for that run. Here, there occurs They love Kurs. It's just they're just can't stop singing the praises of Kurs. Down in Fort Lauderdale, where I've been running, it's all K-Laser and Infinity. So those, and occasionally Crown, but
Yeah.
Crown is like buy two rolls, get one that works.
So,
So I
is
mean,
it something where, in your experience, like you get what you pay for? Is typically like the more money you spend on foil, the easier it's going to be on press? Is that kind of the relationship or not at all?
I've seen no relationship with that whatsoever.
Interesting.
It's just, in fact, we were using certain foils down south and found out that K Laser was less per roll and it worked much better. And there were no minimum orders and they cut the rolls for free. So it all comes down to features and workability and what your shop wants. Kurs will have one of the highest sustainability ratings. So if your customers require a sustainability statement, then that is probably one of the best foils to use for that. So
Interesting.
all these combinations of hot foil, cold foil, whether it's coated stock, laminated, whatever, those all come into play, as well as production speeds. Some run better at higher speeds, others run better at slower speeds. So, and I guess, I don't know. I mean, do what makes you feel good, basically. So when you're designing for this, you need to make sure that you're dealing with proper resolutions, the proper swatches, and building your files and layers. And I can't stress this enough because that's the least of what I see here. For me, I went in on the first day that I was here. I said, "You're doing what?" So I took the mask and I took the print file and I sandwiched everything together with the proper spot colors assigned and sent it over to the machine and everything was lined up without needing to do an acquisition. And they're like, "Huh?" Like I said, "That's how it's made. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how we do it here." So that was a completely, foreign revelation for them. But it's always best to follow, to talk about resolution, follow the resolutions customary for line art. Typically, it's 1200 DPI if you're dealing with a raster file,
Right.
then a small type and that type of thing. That's a bit excessive for this process because the print heads lay it down at 360 DPI. So if I'm building a file with a lot of line art, I'm going to just double that resolution and make it at 720, and then it's easier for the rip to just cut it in half. So it's just, I don't know, it works great for me. I get a clearer output, and everything is just much nicer by the time it gets to the machine. There's less distortion. But if there's no rip available, obviously you need to consult with the print provider for, getting preferences, being that how those print heads operate, what resolution you should be sending your files to the machine. Because in a lot of cases, if it's the wrong resolution, it will resize your artwork.
Interesting.
And now you're in a pickle because that there's no way to fix that on board.
Right.
Yeah. So moving on. I always use these slides about how to build your layers. Make sure everything's on a layer so that you can turn everything off. You've got your CMYK, you've got spot colors being your foil and or varnish. You're going to have your crops, your dye lines. Braille can go on, it should go on its own layer because that's a whole different process. So everything on a different layer. And that way, when it goes to the front end system, and particularly software systems that we're developing right now, it's going to be looking for those keywords to know how to handle that artwork. There's metadata there. And so that determines how those things are separated out and what usability you have further down the line in the pre-press area. Obviously, you use swatches, spot swatches. They have to be spot, 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 spot. And you can make the color build any way you want to. I don't care what the color build looks like, just so it stands out against your page so that you can see what you're doing. But usually, if you're you and like in my case, if you're using a specific rip to send the artwork to the machine, then you need to name them very specifically. For future software things in development, it will be able to kind of infer what you mean and then verify through a system of check boxes. Did you mean for this to be the blue foil, and did you mean for that to be the gold foil? If so, check a box here and we're good to go. So naming is important for pre-press. If it's not named exactly right, and you can give them a PDF with the editing capabilities enabled, which is a little checkbox when you export the PDF, then they can go in and use an ink alias and say, well, whatever is named that, we're going to name it this. And then that way the software can pull out what it needs to do because it's looking for something very specific. So here's a very specific setup for a spot color for varnish. I just made it 100% magenta. Some shops want to make that 100% cyan or vice versa. And my rip wants to see capital VARNISH, and that may vary from shop to shop. Here's another example for a spot color for foil, and I just made it 100% cyan with lowercase I, uppercase FOIL, and that way when it goes to the machine, it knows it's what that means. That means something to it, and it will process that file. Let's see. We talked about choosing the right foil already, and that there are many, many factors surrounding that. It could be customer preference. It could be sustainability. It could be quantity discounts with a certain vendor.
Right.
It could be that it just runs better on your machine than the competitor or another version of it. Of course, it's we call it digital foil, and when you're ordering, you have to basically say digital foil so that they don't get confused, because there's all kinds of foil out there.
And they'll ask you, right? Like, do you have a MGI? Do you have a Scodex? Do you have
Right,
DRX?
because the adhesive back for a Scodex is different as well,
Right.
because that's more of a cold foil process with a stickier varnish, whereas the MGI and the Duplo are going to use a hot stamping method and a less sticky varnish. And
Right.
then, of course, cold foil is a whole different thing that doesn't really apply to this. It's kind of digital, kind of, but not so much. You will have limited choices for metallics and pigments as compared to traditional foiling. But the silver lining here at the bottom is that you can have anything designed and manufactured based on what you're doing. And I personally know some operators that do, on a very frequent basis, need a specific color that matches, say, a sports team. So they'll have the foil custom made to match their PMS colors. And I know that he said that their minimum order is 30,000 feet per order. If you know anybody who's doing that and you need a specific color, you could piggyback and overorder the quantity that they need and then buy what you need off of them. I know some other printers that do that as well. More best practices, plugging. These are common design issues. You can see I fattened up the APOEC and now the E is starting to plug. And the hook on the bottom of the E is starting to touch the crossbar. So you have to be aware that when you're laying down this thick varnish and spraying it on a page, that it could spread slightly. Now, we have ways of going in and contracting it back, but depending on your substrate and how active that surface tension is, it could allow that to just kind of spread out a little bit, and then you'll get some plugging, particularly in the A or the O or the E. That's
Right.
usually where I see it. Tracking is an issue if your letters, some people use it as a design element. They track the letters so close together. Now, those are all going to bleed together when you try and foil that. Everything's just going to turn into kind of one solid thing, and that won't be attractive as well. Line widths, that depends on your machine and what it's capable of doing. Ryan, I know you have the cream of the crop for that, that you can probably go to some incredibly small line widths and still hold them very well because you have the pre-coater on the ZRX. But I mean, even though we have the Corona, which is you electrocute the papers that's going into the machine, and it kind of burns the top micron of the paper is what it does, and it allows that varnish to sit in a more solid whey without spread. It has a little more tack to the surface, I guess, is a way to put it. You can still go pretty small. I definitely wouldn't go smaller than a quarter point, but I usually draw the line at half. Because if you look at the surface of paper and if it's not laminated or coated, you'll notice there's still a texture there. I mean, if you get way down on it with a loop, you'll see that there is a surface texture, and it will cause that line to look a little ragged if it gets too thin. Mask densities, of course, if your dots and lines are too close together, they'll plug up. So if you've got a lot of, if you want to put a tactile layer on it of just dots, which I usually do on the back side of things, because when you're handing someone that, they'll feel that on the back. You put it right on the back where they're going to touch it first, and then they're going to be like, oh, what's this? They'll feel it and be inclined to flip it over almost immediately. It works like magic.
So Matt, I have one question. Maybe you want to go back real fast.
What's that?
One thing that I've noticed is my optimal lines in terms of sharpness and dots is typically when I do like one foil on top of another foil. Have you noticed that too? Is that something where the surface tension is so compatible with itself that you get ridiculous amount of I guess detail?
I have foil. Foiling on foil is one of my favorite techniques, and I was going to go over that in just a little bit here.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude.
No, that's the thing about you, Kevin. You're always like five slides ahead of me.
I'm sorry. All right, keep going.
No, it's okay. I can answer the question. I've done that. I've done it. Remember when I said I had this kind of shaky looking foil? It didn't quite lay down. It looked flaky. And it turns out that the foil was too old to be used. It was over 2 years old, so it wasn't functioning right. Because foil has an expiration date, just like everything. But I thought, what if I just run it through twice? And then the parts where the foil wasn't laying down and looked a little flaky, the layer underneath would make up for the difference. And that was one of the cleanest looking foil jobs I've ever done, even though the foil was defective.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, and we had to have it done that afternoon. It was the only color in that foil we had. We had just a little bit of it left. And they literally needed to get it on the cutter within an hour. So I didn't have a choice. I thought, we got to try something. And that literally saved the job. Yeah, good question. So, best practices for designing with foil. Still, we like to use prototyping, virtual, and live proofs. Again, here is Ryan's beautiful work that we have loaded into Reactor to go in and take a. I don't know if this is transmitting well on Zoom.
It's tough. It's tough to get a good feel for what you're doing on a Zoom video.
Yeah.
You need like a Twitch or 4K YouTube link for YouTube Live to really get a good look.
Yeah, but the whole idea is to load your file. It identifies all the different foils that are resident, and it will display them on a screen to give you the closest approximation to the real thing as if you were holding it, moving it around to the lights and the shadows and up and down to see the depth of it. So you can always use prototyping, virtual and live proofs. This is a virtual, obviously, what you're seeing on screen, but the mo if you have a large job that's that if and if you have a customer that's confused, an industry standard for any of this digital foil and varnish is to offer a live proof, and that is to physically print a sample. They run a test piece, they bring it to you, you load the mask. You do, you run it through the machine, you lay it down where it's supposed to go, and then the salesperson takes it back to them for a sign off. That way, your butt is completely covered. And like, as long as you match that throughout the run, they can't have any complaints about it whatsoever. It's a fail safe. But for a starter, doing the virtual is a great way to move towards the end result, particularly when you're dealing with smaller runs and smaller budgets, because that's where this picks up the slack. They might not be like, oh, I don't want to pay $150 extra because I only need 50 of these done overall. So why am I going to pay you 150 to do just one sheet and then pay up the rest when it's done. It's more economical. Well, we talked at some point in the past about experimenting with textures and patterns. So we talked about foil on foil, which is always a lot of fun, and an aqueous overcoat. So you lay down your foil, your varnish in your foil, and then you run it back through a press with an aqueous overcoat. And I know, Ryan, you're experimenting with that a lot. It's just a, it's diff it's an otherworldly look. It doesn't look like anything else that is out there, and you can't use any other process to mimic it. It is its own thing. It has its own look. So I highly advise that you would experiment with that if you have the possibility. I've done it in the past too, where the customer loved the gold foil, but they didn't like the shiny. And the matte foil looked too much like pigment. It just looked kind of orangey pigment. It just didn't really look like foil. No matter which one you bought, it's more pigment than metallic. So the solution was to use the shiny gold foil and then do a soft touch aqueous over the top of it. And it was absolutely stunning. You can do a varnish overlay on your foil and add little bits of texture, speckling, lines, dots, whatever you need, maybe a tiny minuscule design that mimics a part of their campaign. Put that on top of the foil, and then it would just clear varnish on top of the foil, and that gives it another tack. It gives it another depth, level of depth. You can overprint the foil with color tones using ink or toner. And that's done a lot in cold foiling process because the cold foil is built into the loop of the large press. It just does this little loop over the top and then goes back into it. And so they can over it, then it goes into the CMYK section, and then they can print the CMYK on top of the cold foil. And cold foil is really best suited for large areas, so that works out really well. Very interesting technique, highly underutilized. Almost every machine that does that has that capability, and I don't see anyone using it, and it's quite a shame. And I recently did a video where I reran the silver foil back through the machine with a haze of color. So it just had this kind of it doesn't look like any foil you can buy. It had its own look. And of course you can use a clear hollow foil. It's like a milky clear foil that you can put on top of either print areas of print, which give them that milky holographic look, depending on how you turn it and look at it, or you can put it on top of foil as well. And that was one of the techniques that Adam down in Tulsa introduces too. So if basically you can turn any color of foil into holographic foil,
That's bananas.
it's bananas. And it works real well just to put it on top of a color, like a toner, wherever there's print. So you could do it that way, or run your foil and then put that over lay on it, and
What
it's
happens
just.
if you put varnish or like 3D varnish on top of that?
You need to be careful with that. You wouldn't want to do a solid because putting a solid of varnish or large areas of solid on top of a holographic, large areas of solid varnish on top of a holographic
Kill
foil.
the
Yeah, it changes the lensing
effect. Yeah, that's a good one.
of the way that the holographic light comes off the foil, and then it can actually eliminate that effect. I tried it a long time ago, and I put down my holographic silver, and I thought, what happens if I just put an overcoat of varnish on it? And then it just looked like silver. It totally erased the holographic effect, which is a big waste because that's a much more expensive foil. It's here in this place, we incorporate a lot of foil in branding and packaging design. And
Right.
I think that's pretty much the future of this technique, of this process, is in the world of packaging. What I've done in the past outside of the packaging industry was just a lot of invitations, a lot of high-end invitations for high-end events, including weddings. But that's pretty much where it ended. I mean, there's other things. There's report covers, there's binders, there's folders, there's book covers, there's all kinds of things you can do. But I'm telling you, right now, it's in packaging. And I've got some things here to show you here at the end, some samples sitting over here. These little things. CBD industry, especially the cigar industry, the fitness supplement industry. Those are some of the big up and comers right now. And so is I think it's fun to experiment with textures and patterns for unique effects. And these are some examples of seamless overlays. And if you have access to a service bureau that provides artwork, you just go buy the art. You buy the art and download it. It could be Adobe Stock, it could be Shutterstock, it could be, Dreamtime, it could be Envato. They all have these seamless patterns. So you just go in and search for seamless pattern under illustrations, not photos, but illustrations, because then you'll usually get the vector files, although you really only need an image file,
Right.
because you're going to drop those into Photoshop as a defined pattern, and then you can apply that as an overlay to wherever you want in your artwork, mask it out, put it where you
So,
want to.
what I found was really interesting. I don't know if you've done this before, but particularly when I do patterns of varnish, so digital varnish on top of foil, sometimes, like if I do like circles, right, little dots of varnish on top of the foil of that pattern, it will give me like a concave look. And then if I do a negative of that, so basically I just do, I guess the little walls around all the circles, it gives me like a convex look, like a honeycomb look. And it really has some crazy 3D, I think, visual effects when you place, especially with the circular type patterns of varnish on top of foil.
So if you're really into that type of thing, it's called lenticular patterning. And so you could look that up. And a lot of OEMs are going to have some resources for you. Some of them even build it into their front end for like large flatbed digital versions of doing this, of laying down varnish. They have generators, image generators that determine the angle, the depth.
But even, I mean, without that, just be aware, guys, that if you put like circles on a foil, a circular pattern of clear varnish on top of like a gold foil, it looks really cool. And if you were to do like the negative of that, so basically like a honeycomb, it gives you a totally different effect. It looks like there's holes on the sheet that are debossed. It really, really cool. I really encourage you guys to play with it.
Yeah, so that's easy to do in Illustrator, if you're so inclined to go in and use the make blends tools. So you go to blends and then make, and so you'll create an inner and an outer boundary. Like if it's a circle, a small circle in the middle and a large circle on the outside, and you make the blend and then determine how many steps you want, and then you'll create that type of, it's like a Fresnel lens pattern. And so it's something fun to play with. And you might be able to just be able to buy that artwork stock ready to go and then just drop it on, trim it. And so I'm going to stop my screen share real quick and take you back to some packaging.
Interesting. Oh, beautiful.
Just, yeah. I mean, this is just simple and understated. It's mostly printed, and then it has, foil on it.
Recycled paper, it looks like.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's a speckled paperboard. The light in here is so awful.
Does it feel uncoated or?
It definitely feels uncoated.
Oh, I wonder how much paper that is.
I don't know, but I'm sure they would have it in on file somewhere. And it's coated. I think it's like an aqueous coat.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Wow.
All these little things on the that's just going to stand out on the shelf.
Is that a gold hologram?
No, it's just gold foil.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's got a holographic kind of look to it when you're on the screen here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's the way the background is. It makes you, it's actually when you're looking at it not in the light, it looks hard to read. But then when you hit it in the light, you're like, it pops. Someone worked hard on that design. This is a really interesting foil board design with varnish overlay. And actually, the varnish is on the white, which is kind of weird.
Brett, you're always saying, don't go on
They do a lot of that here, a
the
lot.
white.
But that's the difference is when it kind of works is if it's thick enough and it's going on a laminate. It really needs to go on a laminate. But this one really caught my eye because that foil board is crazy and you can't really see it, but there's a tiny, tiny embossed pattern in
I
there.
don't know. That
It's a combination of things.
was
But this is, I mean, there is some embossing. It is foil board, and it did go through the MGI to
done digitally?
do the varnish overlay. But the foiling, I believe, was Dust Standard. That was done on the big bobst in the back. They do a lot of this stuff. This black with the shiny foil. There's lots of that here. Lots of black. Everything packaging is black. It's
Well, you
just,
get a lot of contrast, right? I think that's what one black with that's so luxurious looking. I think
yeah,
that's
it is.
yeah. Oh, that's cool.
And that's not a lot of varnish to lay that down.
Yep.
Just enough to get that foil on there, basically. And then there's all kind, they just, oh my God, the packaging here just goes on and on for miles and miles.
Beautiful.
But they do other things too. You know, this is the last birthday card that they did for themselves. You know, all this little spots of varnish all over the place. But I'm telling you know, if any of the OEMs that are out there, it's packaging.
Yeah, for
That's
sure.
where they need to send all their sales people.